the next social event we have, rather than me just delivering things to Rob, we'll invite him to the next social event that we have and allow the board to do that yourself. But or we could go to Florida.
Well, we can go to Florida.
Yeah, I think we.
There you go.
Maybe the chairman and a couple of delegates need we need to take a plaque down to him, don't we?
That's a policy we need to work on.
I think the executive committee needs to go down and present the plaque.
I was thinking the Scotland campus, maybe.
That'll be England.
That concludes the executive committee, and we now move to the portion of the agenda of the president's report. President Ransdell.
Let me first call on Robin Taylor. We are about to embark on a 2013 legislative session. It's a short session in a odd-numbered year where a budget is not in stake, but there are other factors that we will track. And Robin?
The session began 1st of January, and on January 10th, I'm sure that you all are aware, and you have it in your board packet, this information. Governor Steve Beshear, Senate President Robert Stivers, and House Speaker Greg Stumbo all gathered with university presidents and quite a few members of the General Assembly for a press conference to announce that they, all three, would support the inclusion of these 11 university agency bond projects in a bill to be passed by the House and the Senate, approved by the governor, so that we can proceed with agency bond projects. There were 11 projects for 6 universities. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how this all came together and what's unique about it. I do want to clarify, particularly for the media who are in the room, that agency bond projects are projects that the universities pay for. This is not the state giving us money for construction. They, we have to submit these for approval. They have to approve them, but we and the issuance of the bonds, but we pay the debt service on those. So I just want to be sure that we're clear. These projects, this for us is the Honors College Building, and you all are familiar with the Honors College Building, the International Center combined project. We had requested this project, and many of the projects on this 11 project list were projects that universities had requested in the 2012 session. And those were not included in the budget, as you are aware. So this is a decision that the governor has made and brought along. He gets a lot of credit for bringing the House and Senate together to, on the front end of the session, approve, at least in concept, these projects for us. There's still a process they have to go through, certainly. We're expecting a bill to be filed when they come back on February the 5th or soon thereafter. I have not seen a bill yet, but I'm expecting the House A&R, Appropriations and Revenue Chairman, to be the sponsor of that bill. And I believe that because it is a budget action, they have to have two-thirds of both the House and the Senate to approve it, because this is a non-budget year session, a 30-day short session. What's unique is that typically we pull together a list of construction projects, the capital projects that we ask for the state to pay for, and the agency bond projects for those universities who have one, and we typically have one. We ask for those to be done in a budget session, and then we go out and we individually try to talk to legislators about our project. Those all go through a process at CPE, but it's an individual process as much as anything when you're trying to get support for them. This particular opportunity came together because the presidents came together and talked about the importance of these projects. We didn't get them in the last session. Haven't had, as the presidents pointed out several times, capital projects funded by the legislature in quite some time. And the agency bond projects have been a way for us to continue to move forward. So the presidents got together. Two presidents signed on to this without a project on the list. You've seen the packet. It includes a letter that all the presidents signed on to. We also, with Northern Kentucky University leading the charge, did a study on economic impact and job creation. And I think those were, I think the unity of the presidents and the economic impact aspect of this were very compelling for the governor. And so we're very excited to get started on the front end of the session with a little bit of hopefully positive news and some success on the horizon. We do still have to go through a process. I do expect some, I do expect things to unfold hopefully quickly. There's an emergency clause, or has an agreement for an emergency clause, and the bill can be passed and we can begin to proceed. But you never know. Nothing's ever done until they adjourn, sine die. So we'll hope for the best. We are tracking just a few bills right now in, that affect higher education. Most of those have to do with financial aid. There's one tuition waiver bill filed so far, and then I talked about tuition waivers on a daily basis. Representative Carl Rollins, who is the House Education Chairman, has filed a resolution that would establish a task force, a pretty broad task force, to study higher education issues relating to appropriations and also student financial aid. The bill, as it's written now, doesn't include any institutional representation, but the president's met with Carl a couple weeks ago when they were all in Frankfurt. He has agreed to amend that bill to put institutional representation from the research, comprehensive universities, and KCTCS on the task force. So we expect when he introduces that bill in committee for it to be changed. And that ought to be a great opportunity for us as well to talk about our funding issues and student financial aid. As I think I mentioned, legislature starts back on February the 5th, but we will have two major events in the Capitol this session. I like to make sure you all are aware of those. The first one is going to be for the Gatton Academy on February 13th. House and Senate will recognize the Gatton Academy for being named the number one high school in America by Newsweek magazine. And then on February 26th, we will host the Kentucky Teacher Hall of Fame. We've now done that for several years, and we have three teachers who've been selected for the Hall of Fame this year. We typically have a luncheon and then a Capitol rotunda service with the governor, and then recognition for those teachers on the House and Senate floor. So it's a 30-day session. It's going to go by quick, but it's going to be busy. Any questions?
Thank you, Robert.
I got a comment. Good.
A
positive one. I on the third page, I don't think they're numbered, but looking at our bond rating, such a great job, Ann and Dr. Renzel and Robin. It's incredible that our bond rating is so good.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you point that out. First of all the university bond ratings are better than the Commonwealth's bond rating. Whatever that's worth, but you look at the university bond ratings, and you clearly see that we have the highest, and we are equal to Eastern for the highest bond rating among the universities, and our bond is less than 5% of our total budget.
Another comment.
I mean, our indebtedness is exceedingly low for a university of our size and complexity, and we've managed to control our debt more than any other university that I'm aware of.
And so much of our bonding debt, we're generating additional revenue to service that debt through the bonding that we've done. Hopefully the Honors College is going to be a source of additional revenue as we add to that program I think that's very important. I'd be curious to know at some point what percentage of the other universities, what percentage of their bond indebtedness to their revenue. In other words, their bond servicing the debt to their revenue.
Is that something you can...
Sure. I just want to interject because it's hard to tell what media outlets you read. Moody's recently came out with a report that has been kind of widely distributed about a negative outlook for higher education. And please remember that when they talk about higher education, they talk about the independent colleges and universities, proprietary schools. So there's a broad array of institutions and a broad array of bond ratings. So while the outlook for higher education is negative, and they're making a big splash about the fact that it is a decline for the first time, they are focusing on institutions that have probably gone beyond an acceptable percentage of debt. So if you do see anything, don't be alarmed. Several years ago, I did look at bond ratings, and what you see is the difference between the research universities and the comprehensive universities. And I studied it in terms of, was there anything in our capacity to get a bond rating equal to the doctoral institutions? And what happens is that the size of the large research universities really does have an impact on bond ratings. Some of the larger endowments, more revenue streams. So while I believe we have a very solid rating, I didn't see a capacity to improve it. So we have no issues. Moody's does do an annual assessment. Standard & Poor's does a we update them with our most recent financial statements. And we update them with our new giving numbers and our updated enrollments. So for a hefty fee, they oblige us with an annual assessment as to if any reason that our bond rating ought to be changed. We will always get a new bond rating when we issue debt. At this point, it looks like when you meet for your fall meeting, we'll ask you to approve certain documents allowing us to issue the rest of the bonds to complete the DUC renovation. And at that time, we'll be able to report back to you on if there's any changes in our bond ratings.
And this project will be somewhat simultaneous to that as well.
If the General Assembly gives us the authorization, then I think the timing will make sense fiscally for us to issue the bonds together. They will be what we call general receipts indentures. Mr. Ridley tells me that interest rates are moving and that we need to do anything more quickly. But from a cash flow perspective on the DUC renovation, a fall bond sale makes sense. And financially, it makes sense for us to do, if we're going to do the Honors International, that we would get the authorization at the same time. Maybe more than what you wanted to know, but when I saw the media coverage about the Moody's report for about the third time, then I thought, well, obviously, if you get someone's attention, then it's a little bit of a hype.
Anything else from the legislative session?
Thanks. Thank you, Robin. John Osborne, Brian Russell. Bring us up to date on construction projects, please.
Good afternoon. As usual, Brian and I have prepared for you and your board materials a printed report that summarizes the majority of the projects that we have underway, all the major projects, and then a category for all of our smaller projects. We typically answer any questions you might have from that report at this time, but also we try to profile just two or three projects for you, and that's what we're here to do today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brian.
Good afternoon. I think these are some exciting projects that you all have a lot of interest in. I know that they are very important to the university. This Dero Downing University renovation and addition that is in progress, the nursing facility and the physical therapy, actually the new physical therapy program that is actually getting kicked off this year, Augustine Alumni Center. And then we're going to talk about a WKU proposal for Normal Street and State Street. This was a shot taken Monday of our Downing University Center over to the right. I've had a lot of people ask me, what is that? And I've had a lot of answers, but it's actually a mock-up of some of the detail of the construction project that is done early so that we can evaluate it, the architects can evaluate it, and the owners can evaluate it and make comments. So that's one of the little details of a large construction project that is typically done. You'll see that we have a large stair tower that's being built in an addition portion of the building, and that's actually an egress stair. And for everyone that knows the building now, we used to be a first, second, third, and fourth floor. In the complete renovation of this project, we are now going to be a ground, first, second, and third. We used to not have access from the fourth to the ground floor fluidly. And now we'll have that on the front of the building, and we'll also have it on this side of the building also. This is where the grand staircase is. I want you to take a look at the size of the person and the saw and the large beam that actually runs across the entire length of the building. And I think they told me that each section that they're cutting off and removing is about 7 tons. But this is making way for the new stair tower that's going to be built so that we can actually go up a very grand stair tower and be able to walk on the fourth or the third floor now without being impeded or having to go to a different floor and a different door, et cetera.
Say that again. Go back to that. Well, that guy's cutting.
Yes.
That's a beam.
Section to his
right is 7 tons.
7 tons. So, he's just not going to drop that with a rope then, is he?
No, we've got a crane sitting out front of the building. But you can see where the hole is. Those were very large sections of concrete also that have been removed by the crane once they've made the cuts. Typically, they'll shore up under all of this. It's actually got a big framework under it and supports, and they actually cut it so it really isn't capable of dropping. And then they'll pick it up with the lugs that they've drilled through and lift it and safely put it on the ground. It's quite a process because in a renovation, we are doing a lot of cutting of existing concrete. But this structure, even though it was built in 1970, everybody talked about it had great bones. But what they meant is that we've stripped it down to the concrete structure. It was very well built in the 1970s, and it's a structure that was worth saving. And it's about 200,000 square feet in total. This is just a little shot inside of some steel stud framing that's going together. You can see in this photograph just a little bit of ductwork. This is in the fresh fruit area of the renovation. You can see people working, but you can also see that there's some rough ends going in. You've got ductwork that's gone in. You've got insulation that's going in. You've got your fire sprinkler lines going in. One of the features of this project, even though it's a two-year-long project, it's phased in Phase A and a Phase B. And Phase A is scheduled at the end of July to have a portion of the building ready for occupancy for this next upcoming fall semester. That's going to be a Starbucks, which is a full-blown Starbucks in the front. It's going to be a full-blown bookstore, and it's going to be a full-blown fresh food company that's very important to our students. And I think that's going to be quite an accomplishment to get that done at the end of August. This is the new facade and balcony on the very front of the building. And what I've done is taken a shot at this angle so that you can see the same shot of the rendering that's coming in the future. We go back, you can see the columns, and you can see the windows, and you can see the angles that closely match what you see here in the rendering. So it gives us an idea of where we're going with this facility. The large structure at the end is the grand staircase and our stair tower. And I think you'll see that it's really going to be quite a centerpiece for our campus that we'll be very proud of for years and years to come.
That tower will complete during the next academic year, but it won't necessarily be fully complete when we move in August. We will still have occupied areas that Brian's covered, but the stair tower itself will come online during the year.
The next project is our nursing and physical therapy facility that is being built by the medical center here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. This project is also going to be online fall of 2013. We're approximately 40% complete with this structure. It is what they call a greenfield site where they're building it up. Basically have taken out some parking lot areas and putting in a new facility for Western's use. We're going to be occupying all three floors. Medical Center is going to occupy about 20% of the building on the first floor only. Inside, you can see a lot of the similar components. You've got the fire sprinkler piping going in. You have electrical rough ends. You've got the sanitary plumbing. You've got the water piping, and you've got HVAC. You see that this construction site is a very clean site. We've got a lot of manpower working every day on it, and I feel very confident that we continue to be on schedule. This is a picture also taken Monday of the Augustine Alumni Center. This project is very prominent, matches the architecture very well on top of the hill. As you go down our College Heights Boulevard, this is the vista that you see as part of our growing campus. I think everybody's going to be very proud of the finished product. This is our ballroom located on the first floor. This is just a typical office suite with inside of the building. This is on the third floor. They are starting to finish, and a lot of times they'll finish from the top of the building and work their way down to move out. So this is just an area on the third floor that we keep the doors locked once they get to a certain level of finish. This is on the first floor, and this is just a typical corridor that's going by the ballroom. But I wanted you all to note the nice windows and the elegant windows that are being put into this facility. This is an office workroom, and this is just an example of some of the areas that are being developed inside of this structure. This is going to be the formal dining room. So they're working on the details and starting to put the last of the finishing touches on before they work their way to the floor finishes. This is going to be the roof or the ceiling portion of the finished library. A lot of red colors, a lot of vibrant colors in the building. This is a typical restroom decor that is throughout the building in several different places.
Let me mention one thing before you move away from that particular building, that the ballroom portion will be managed by a newly reconfigured Office of Conferencing and Catering Services. And we are in the process of splitting our Aramark contract and splitting out catering from campus services with Aramark, campus dining and restaurants. And Mary, our catering and conferencing functions, and a gentleman named Derek Olive has been hired to direct that operation, and he will work hand in glove with Karen Winkle, who will direct the catering operations. This room right here will be part of that conferencing portfolio with the Nicely Center, and D'Lo will be paying the lease for this portion of this building, this project, and therefore will be charged with filling it from a conferencing and catering standpoint, and it will be part of the same revenue and presumably profit center with the Nicely Center packaged into one portfolio with conferencing and catering services. So I just wanted you to be aware of that changing dynamic, which accommodates two different conferencing sites at either end of our campus.
D'Lo will pay the lease to whom?
To the the downtown.
Technically, we are responsible for collecting internally. WKU pays SPE2.
Okay. We don't own this space. We don't own this building, but we do pay a lease for it, correct?
The next topic is not a construction project, but more just a piece of information we thought we would share with you, so as the events and time unfold, you know what's going on relevant to, in this case, an operational issue that's been going on. As many of you know, there were streets on this campus that were, in the past years, owned and operated by the city that literally ran by or through the campus. I mean, for example, going back quite a ways, what we once knew as Big Red Way and Center Street that ran through campus was a city-controlled street, which is now a university street known as Avenue of Champions and College Heights Boulevard. Dogwood Avenue was once a city street that's now College Heights Boulevard. What was once known as 15th Street in front of College High Hall has been transferred to the university as well. I mentioned those only to say that over a passage of time, those things have happened, and we have come to the point where, because of the activity level that's along Normal and State that goes through the campus, and the activity level that's been produced as a result of enrollment in building construction projects and so forth, has caused a significant growth in the volume of pedestrian crossings along Normal and State Street, particularly during, as you might imagine, normal business hours of the university. So through the last few years, Western has been making some improvements in our property where we can and how we can, related to projects that we've done to improve pedestrian safety. But we've about reached a point where we have proposed to the city that a section of Normal and a section of State, and I'll diagram them for you right here, will be converted from being a city street to a university street. Now, that's from the intersection to get your bearings. This is Regents. And so we're only talking about where the blue line is, and that would be from this intersection of Normal and Regents to the intersection of College Heights Boulevard and State. Now, as you know, Normal turns into State at that intersection. In other words, it just changes. It changes, actually, State Street, for your information, stays straight to here. This little section is State Street. So the Normal ends at the intersection with State Street. So what I'm suggesting to you is that as a result of all that's happened along this corridor in the last few years and with the enrollment growth and so forth, the pedestrian improvements that we've been making, we feel, still need to be extended even beyond what we've already done. We're quite pleased, quite frankly, with several things that we've done with regards to widening the sidewalks and putting in safeguards in well-marked and lit areas, but we feel more needs to be done. And to be honest with you, that's not typically the responsibility of the city when the origin of that is with the university. So similar, what we're suggesting is, go ahead and advance, Brian, that the things that we would do as a result of that area becoming the university's control is that we would, of course, improve the lighting, the sidewalks, crosswalks, and we would place them where we think they need to go, not necessarily where city ordinances or city codes would allow you to put them, but rather where we think they should go. And then we would significantly reduce a vehicular speed along that area. We would make that a 15-mile-per-hour speed limit, just like the rest of campus. And we would have some additional improvements for bus pull-offs and bus unloading areas. This is the area that was once 15th Street, and you see what we've done. We've improved the walks. We put in lighting and so forth. That all came after it was transferred to from the city to the university. What we're talking about doing is doing exactly the same thing. This was a recent photograph, although, boy, I miss all those green trees. But not long ago, this fall, we had a project where we did underground electrical project that you may be aware about. I mean, we've talked about it before. We had a lot of electrical work. Whenever we go in, we look long-term when we come back. We knew we needed to widen this walk. So at our expense, with city's approval, we widened this walk all the way from here, which is across from Cravens, all the way up to Thompson when we put it in. You can see the difference. That's a private city, that's a private walk, a private property on the other side of that end. And what we are suggesting is that this kind of work would continue all the way down. Go ahead to the next one. We continue all the way down that side of the street till it connected with some other improvements we've already put in place related to the Publications Building and the College of Education Building. So what we're simply doing is we couldn't do all these things unless we got the city to agree. We've been to the Public Works Department. We've talked to them. They have prepared materials that has been submitted to the City Commission in a work session last week. They will put it on their agenda. You may be reading about it. That's why I brought it up. They will be on the City Commission agenda. There will be two readings. Probably the first reading will be February 5th. We anticipate there to be no issues. It would be approved. And then, with the passage of time, the university would go about the business of continuing to make these kinds of pedestrian improvements for lighting and sidewalks and pull-offs and improved crosswalks, etc. All about the fact that we've got a lot of students crossing this road now. When you consider what we own on the other side of the road, along with the affiliated organizations that generate student crossings as well. Any questions on that?
Just a question about those excellent rumble strips that just went in near New Snell Hall. Was that our idea or the city's? It's a great idea, and it improves pedestrian safety right there between that parking lot and New Snell.
That is actually a city street, and we work and we work with the city.
Yeah, Chestnut. Yeah.
Chestnut.
That was great. That was great because that's come up that hill. It's blind, and there's that crosswalk.
Well, we've increased the volume again. What did we just do? We just acquired property a few months ago. Yeah. We put in 100 parking spaces as a result of that. I believe it was 100 or right at it. Huh?
50.
Oops, I doubled that. 50 parking spaces. I wanted it to be 100. But we put in 50 parking spaces on Chestnut, adjacent to the existing what is known as the Chestnut North lot, which was one of the most over-demanded lots we have on campus. So it was very welcome, and it increased pedestrian traffic across that crossing.
That's absolutely,
and that's a precarious location.
It is. It really helps with safety. It's great.
So that's all about what we do with master planning as well as facilities management. Is we try to marry all of our developments to take care of and address all those kinds of considerations related to pedestrian and vehicular traffic flow. Any questions about our report and the book or what we've covered today? Be happy to entertain.
Excellent job.
I think our provost has his hand up over here.
I have a comment. At the bottom of page 2 of your report, looks like this. You'll notice a project called the Information Commons at Cravens. Grand opening of that facility will be on January 31, I believe 4 o'clock, but it's open right now. And as well as visiting the exhibit downstairs, if you have time before you leave campus to go up to the Cravens Library, I think you'll be very impressed with the facility we've created for our students to meet, study, and want the library to be a place students want to go.
Thank you, Gordon. I'm Brian. Thank you all.
Thank you.
It's not on the agenda, but I thought I'd give Catherine an opportunity. I attended the WKU Foundation board meeting last Friday, and prompts me to ask Catherine to give a year-end gift and endowment report that I think would be helpful for the board to track.
It'll be very brief. You can go to the next slide. But the president thought you would like to see how we're doing in terms of endowment between the foundations. All of the HAF money goes into the WKU Foundation, but between the two foundations, College Heights and WKU, we now have $120 million in endowment. I think it's important, since you just heard the progress on Alumni Square, to remember that in addition to scholarships, faculty support, program support, and often money to help construction, WKU Foundation, I think the president would attest, was absolutely central to the ability of Alumni Square to happen. It wouldn't have been possible without the WKU Foundation. So the partnership goes so far beyond the typical things that you think about, which is stewardship of money, raising money, but also it's an asset that the university is called upon with good result to help do things that could not be done through normal university channels. It not shown here, but just relevant, this was as of 11:30. The end of the calendar year, our fundraising from July through December 31st was about $9.4 million, which is a good pace considering we're a year after the campaign is over. And if we keep at that pace, we will have one of our best years ever. I hope we'll keep at that pace. I can't guarantee it. In addition, the Augustine Alumni Center, April 12th, that weekend is the dedication of that building. And in addition to the beautiful pictures that John and Brian showed and the great work they've done, I will credit Donald Smith and the committee for working with the designers and putting some extremely unique touches in that building. There's some things the president doesn't even know about yet that are surprises, original works that are going into the building. You'll be thrilled. But, I mean, they've gone very much beyond the typical lovely building, and it has a lot of very personal touches and a lot of original things, as well as taking some older things from the campus and incorporating them in a way that will be meaningful. I took my little tour to see how it's coming along last week, and I've also seen a couple of the surprise pieces that will be going in, and it is spectacular. There will not be another alumni center of any better quality anywhere in the country, I can assure you, and it's been great work by our design team on campus, and I think really engaged work by the volunteers and Donald Smith to make certain that every single thing was thought through in the best possible way. And again, the foundation was key in helping to make that happen. Fundraising has played a role in making it possible. But I wanted you to know that in addition to looking after money for the benefit of the university, the foundation is often there to help do things that we just can't do otherwise. We had a good board meeting. We have three new openings on the board, and we'll be adding new members to the board probably at the April meeting. Importantly, the board in the last 2 years has completely renovated itself. Dick Brock and I kind of led that charge. We have now absolute best practices in place in every way, from our bylaws, which were a bit outdated, to the processes we use to operate the foundation. So I feel very good about where it is relative to other foundations around the country. We're working well with College Heights on modernizing things there. They've made some very good progress in improving good processes that were a bit old-fashioned and taking advantage of our systems. And so I think in general you can feel good about how the foundations are operating and serving the institution. Be glad to answer any questions.
The Alumni Association Board, I really want to echo your commendation of that board. They have led this effort with both style and determination, and have now surpassed their goal of what they needed to raise to pay for the building, and now they're paying for some additional amenities that they would have liked to have done that weren't in the original target, as I understand it.
Yes.
And in fact, it prompted me to lean over to Catherine when I heard this report last week and suggest, okay, what's our next building project? Because it seems like our alumni, it has resonated with them for a brick-and-mortar project to get behind. So I expect any time now, Catherine, to tell me what that next project might be.
I won't make an announcement today. We'll talk about that. But it does show up. Well, it's interesting, and you'll see when you walk through the building. Well, there's going to be the Ridley Veranda, for example. There are rooms named for many people that sit in this room with us, and there are other unique features. What's been interesting is people who had given small amounts of money for other things suddenly were excited to be able to name this tiny but unique space within the building. It might even be a conference table or a cabinet that holds a WKUR. We have a beautiful small area for exhibiting WKU Alumni Association and other sort of memorabilia and things of that sort. And people have really resonated. It's up their gifts, because they see something very specific. So I do think the model works. And, you know, I think let us take a deep breath and we'll talk about other buildings in the future. But I urge you all to come to the opening and to see it, because it will be the home for alumni from around the world. And importantly, I think it will be a place where programming for alumni and programming that can be used by colleges and schools on campus to bring people to the campus to a unique facility that complements the Nicely Center and allows us to do different things. So
it's a dimension we've never really had on our campus throughout our history, and so it opens up a whole new era in alumni relations.
And
we're now over 100,000 alumni, and gives them a home.
We are in search for Donald Smith's replacement. As you know, he moved to College Heights Foundation, and he's continuing his alumni role through April, the opening of the building, and so we're in search for that position, and we hope to find somebody who's ready to take advantage of that wonderful new facility and the opportunity.
Has Lee Robertson applied?
Well, he did. He personally at my office and said that he thought he would like to apply.
He would do
that. So he's on record as having. And if anyone could do it at 90, he could.
Premature question. We have decided what we're going to do with the old facility yet?
Yeah, it'll have to be renovated. It was the home of three presidents. not to be morbid, but two presidents died in that home, and the son of a president died in that home. Cherry and Garrett both died in that home, and Hardin Thompson died in that home. It was built in 1926 as the original president's home for President Cherry. It's a classic architecture, and it is worthy of being restored and staying on our campus. It's an important part of our history. So, yeah, it will need to be renovated, and we've already begun to look at that, and we can do that within our small projects pool within the planning, design, construction unit on campus, so it won't be newly budgeted funds. It'll be funds that are already budgeted for small projects. But, yeah, it we intend to restore that back to its original character as a historic property. I want to thank you, Catherine. There's an article in USA Today last week that I want to hand to you and others in the room as well. That just whatever it's worth, it just kind of caught my attention. And as we look to create opportunities for our alumni to be engaged, I just thought you might find interest that we were on the backside, affordable retirement towns to be listed there. Somebody had done some pretty good homework. I just thought you might like to see that.
Number two on the list.
Mm-hmm. Pretty scary when the general counsel and the chair start whispering over here. Huh?
It'd be scary if I asked you to leave.
I'm sorry, sir.
That's all right. I'm through. That was my report.
You just be able to stay by. That concludes the president's report. A couple of housekeeping matters. March 29th is our committee meetings. April 26th is our second quarterly meeting. Next item on the agenda is a closed session to discuss legal matters. That motion that you gave us needs to be revised just a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think you can just say we're going to close session.
Okay. So,
well, what was the date for the spring meeting again? April.
April 26th.
Thank you.
Okay. So, just to kind of give everybody a heads up, we'll take a after we go into closed session. I know we need to take a quick break to go to the bathroom and stuff, but so everybody's not held in suspense. If we properly pass a motion to go in closed session, then we'll squeeze in a bathroom break before we start those discussions. So,
Mr. Chair, I move that the board go into closed session to discuss pending legal litigation. It's provided under KRS 61.810.
Motion to go into closed session for that purpose has been stated by Regent Porter. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Regent Minner. Any other discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? So approved.
Mr. Chair, before we take a break here, congratulations to you on your appointment as Commissioner of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. That is a serious appointment and a significant appointment, and I know quite a curveball for you with your practice, but what a great statement of respect which the governor and others in the executive branch have expressed in you to assume those responsibilities. So congratulations, and I was quite relieved when I was assured that would not in any way interfere with your duties as chair of our board.
Well, thank you, sir. My first question when they asked me, I said, whoa, first question, does it interfere with that, with the Western board? And they assured me that it did not. As long as we didn't hold a liquor license, and we don't. I appreciate that very much. And I look forward to it.
Let's go have a drink, all right?
That's right.
Yeah, cheers.
All right.